It's May 31st, 2016, and you're listening to Monday Morning Meetings on Migration, a conversation about migration and politics at the University of Amsterdam. I'm Darshan Vigneshwaran. Now, a couple of weeks back, Elaine Chase talked to us about the experience of unaccompanied minors and their difficulty both socially and psychologically in adjusting to life in the UK and more generally in Europe. Now, for a few weeks now, we've been trying to move in the direction away from the continent and to try and bring in experiences about migration, society and politics further afield. And so today we're happy to have a rejoinder from Stanford Mahati, a researcher at the African Centre of Migration and Society in South Africa. He's going to talk to us about the experience of unaccompanied minors in that society, and particularly looking at this from a perspective of the child migrants themselves, their own agency and their ability to establish their lives in a new environment. We hope you enjoy.
Well, thank you for giving me this opportunity to contribute to the ongoing debate on migration and politics, specifically focusing on the migration of unaccompanied migrant children to Europe. I am currently based in Johannesburg, South Africa. And over the years, I've been conducting research on unaccompanied minors. Thus, I am going to use South Africa's experiences of responding to the serious plight of these children as a case study. Of note, there are some similarities on what UK and other European countries are experiencing and what South Africa has been experiencing. Of note, the major difference is that South Africa is a resource-poor country and is struggling to adequately address the needs of children on the move. In Southern Africa, and in recent years, there has been an increasing interest in independent migrant children who are beyond their national borders. The idea of children on the move without their parents and guardians invokes thoughts of victims of abuse, deviance, and neglect. These children are widely assumed to be immature and vulnerable, and therefore in need of care and support. But before I proceed, let me just say that, just like in Europe, in South Africa, agencies which are providing service to children on the move are calling these children unaccompanied migrant children. Based on the research I did on the interface between children on the move and humanitarian workers, I would like to argue that in our case in Southern Africa, we should consider using the term independent child migrants rather than unaccompanied migrant children, because it acknowledges children's migration choices are a consequence of family level decisions that facilitate children's movement rather than a failure of adults to accompany or protect them. I agree with the view that children are beings who, as social actors, possess agency. In my view, calling them unaccompanied is problematic as it generates problems when rolling out interventions targeting them. Thus, let's think about how childhood is being conceptualized by different social actors and its consequences on these children. Why are they migrating to South Africa? South Africa is one of Africa's biggest economies. Going to South Africa is a way of to improve one's living situation. Secular migration is very dominant. This means that migrants, including independent migrant children, often visit their countries of origin with remittances ranging from money to groceries. This population of migrants now include children, many of them from Zimbabwe, a country which is going through economic and political hardships. Many of them do not have the appropriate traveling documents. They use illegal entries and exit points to cross the border. In South Africa, a significant population of independent migrant children are interested in working and continuing with their education. They are doing or seeking unskilled jobs, mainly in the informal sector, where many of them are experiencing abuse and exploitation. Of note, many of the children are not seeking reunification with their families either in South Africa or their countries of origin, like what we've just heard about what is happening in Europe, where children are trying to reunite with their families. Nevertheless, service providers informed by the dominant idea of home being the best place for children to be in, are making concerted efforts to reunify children with their families. Children rejected this form of intervention as they describe it as against their best interests and aspirations. Concerned about the plight of independent migrant children, the South African government, the civil society, including churches, rose to the occasion, but a bit slowly and in an uncoordinated manner, to set up various services like places of safety in areas which receive a lot of migrants. But these service providers faced a serious lack of resources, material and human, to adequately assist independent migrant children. Due to lack of support from the South African government, a number of independent migrant children in South Africa are being forced to rely on the local and international humanitarian agencies for food, access to medical care, education, and shelter. However, the donor-dependent community-based organizations were and remain overwhelmed by funding constraints, high staff turnover, lack of capacity, and management challenges, issues that had affected them from the moment they were established. This situation created uncertainties over the continuity of their programs. It's important to highlight the fact that, unlike in Europe, independent migrant children in South Africa don't have easy access to basic things and opportunities like education and protection right from the time they arrive in South Africa. But this issue of independent migrant children in Europe not having a sense of security and well-being is also shared by independent migrant children in South Africa. These children are also worrying so much about the future. Consistent with the international agreements it signed, for example, the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child and the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child, the South African government has in place various laws, policies, and structures which also protect the rights of migrant children. For example, the children's courts deal specifically with children's matters and determine whether a child, including one who is an independent migrant, is in need of care and protection. However, due to resource constraints and challenges in translating policies into actions, many of the children's courts across the country are not fully operational and being utilized. Consequently, a significant population of independent migrant children are not documented. If the court finds that the child is in need of care and protection, the court can order that he or she be placed in a temporary place of safety until a permanent placement is made. The Children's Act states that the court order lapses after 2 years and cannot be extended beyond the child's 18th birthday. The court must review the order every 2 years and extend it or release the child. As said earlier, due to lack of capacity by various government departments as well as by humanitarian agencies, this is not happening in most cases. For example, the South Africa's Bill of Rights explicitly protects the rights of all children regardless of nationality. Independent migrant children fall within the Children's Act. This act, which constructs independent children as children in need of care, makes it very clear that it seeks to preserve and promote families. So it is under the umbrella of this act that interventions like placing them in home-like places of safety and the reuniting them with their families are carried out. But one of the challenges is that many of these children are not being placed in places of safety, as these places are very few. Many areas did not have registered places of safety for children. Drawing from the discourse that no more children go to school, some of the temporary places of safety support children who are only interested in going to school and not working. The few places of safety which are there are poorly resourced. As a result, many migrant children do not want to live in these shelters. They leave the shelters and become vulnerable. They are being exploited in various places and in the streets. In another example, South Africa said that there should be social workers to protect and support vulnerable children. However, South Africa has a critical shortage of social workers in the country as a whole. At the time of study, one of the border towns had only 4 social workers, too few to follow the proper procedures for handling independent migrant children as laid down in the law. In a recent study I conducted, a number of humanitarian workers and state actors, including the social workers themselves, said they did not have the technical and material capacity to deal with the hundreds of migrant children. South Africa's situation is not unique, as resource-poor countries, particularly in the Global South, are finding it hard to support foreign migrants as they are finding it difficult to meet the needs of their own populations. In South Africa, one of the major driving factors of child migration is pursuit of educational opportunities. To ensure children have access to education, the South African Schools Act of 1996 requires public schools to admit all children without unfair discrimination. Thus, independent migrant children's access to education is supported by this act. However, only a tiny population of independent migrant children are being enrolled in South African schools. School authorities, many with no clear understanding on how to handle independent migrant children, often demand the following papers from these children who left their home countries under difficult situations: letter of transfer from the previous school, last school report, and a permit to be in South Africa. In this particular case, a temporary asylum permit or passport with a study permit. The majority of independent migrant children coming from troubled countries had problems in producing these documents and therefore difficulties in accessing education. However, it's important to note that a significant population of independent migrant children have either finished school, those between 16 and 17, like finishing secondary school, or were not interested in attending school but work in order to support themselves and to contribute to their household economies in countries of origin. The other piece of legislation that governs migration in South Africa is the Immigration Act, which addresses the issue of detention of unaccompanied minors, migrant children. The Immigration Act states that if detained, minors should not be mixed with adults. Rather, they should be put in accommodation appropriate for their age. By the way, the South African Children Act prevents the detention of children for immigration purposes and states that they cannot be removed without a court order. These laws were and continue to be violated by the state actors, and implementation is very poor. However, during the height of the political and economic problems in Zimbabwe between 2007 and 2010, independent migrant children were detained and mixed with adults. There were serious, numerous cases of children who had been detained and deported illegally. However, the numbers are not available, because in general, even it's very difficult to get numbers on the number of children who are in South Africa and they are not accompanied by their parents or guardians, or they are not with their parents and guardians. These cases were common at the South Africa and Zimbabwe border, particularly at night. On a positive note, these cases have significantly been reduced. The South African government, working closely with humanitarian agencies, have worked hard to stop the abuse of independent migrant children by state and non-state actors. Like in Europe, very few independent migrant children were getting refugee status. It is difficult for children in South Africa to prove a well-founded fear of persecution with the Refugee Convention. Of note, the dominant discourse prevailing in the South African government is that the migrants, particularly from Zimbabwe and Mozambique, are economic refugees and not political refugees. This is despite reports that there are serious political problems in Zimbabwe, for example, even claims by some of the children that they are victims of political violence were easily dismissed. What is happening is that independent migrant children get temporary asylum seeking permits, but these children are few as there are no adequate support systems to help them access this permit. Then getting them renewed is always difficult for the majority of the few children who got temporary asylum seeking permits. Consequently, many of the children remain undocumented. They struggle to access basic services like access to education. A number of them fail to write national school examinations after having attended school in South Africa for years. In addition, children without proper documents are always living in fear of persecution and being deported. Thus, independent migrant children in South Africa also experience this negative effect on their psychological and broader well-being as a result of not having documents. Of note, when South Africa implemented the program of legalizing the status of undocumented migrants from Zimbabwe, children were not covered. The children who arrived in the country many years ago, they still don't have papers. Some of them have since become adults. Since a number of them are working, they fear reporting cases of being abused and exploited at workplaces. They cannot easily and safely travel to their countries of origin and back. They are struggling to maintain links with their families, as well as to send remittances through formal and safe channels. In addition, these children, like those in Europe, are also living under constant fear of being policed, including by the service providers. It's important to highlight that service providers, including government officials like the police and social workers, had two contradictory positions towards independent migrant children. During formal situations, they tended to be supportive towards these children. But during informal situations, times when journalists, researchers are not there, for example, they tended to criticize these children. They framed these children as deviants. They pointed out that no more children live with their parents and guardians, that they live at home. That the multiplicity of childhood, shifting understandings of children on the move, was very problematic. It is important to understand the discourses which dominate at particular times, why they dominate, and their consequences on the lives of these children. Independent migrant children are active social actors. They are responding to bureaucrats responsible for their age and support. Of note, children are aware of the shifts in the understandings of childhood and vulnerability, and they often manipulate the situation to advance their interests or to assess services. Interestingly, service providers were aware of the different ways these children played the system. Their response depended on the dominant discourse which was prevailing at that time. At times, they worked closely to undermine the system and advance their interests. I support the point that independent migrant children at times have positive relationships with social workers and other service providers. However, it's important to note that there are shifting representations of independent migrant children during formal and informal times. It resulted at times these children having confidence to share part of their lives with social workers, and other times withdrawing certain information from them as they feared that doing so would ruin their plans. For example, some children lied that they were 18 years and above in order to be allowed to work. But at times they said the truth in order to be allowed to live in places of safety for children. About carrying out age assessments to determine who is eligible to receive support as a child. The situation in South Africa is very complex and problematic too. Age assessments are highly subjective. They were carried out by different service providers, including social workers and humanitarian workers, not using scientific techniques. Formerly, service providers defined a child as one who is below 18 years, but operationally, they had a loose definition of a child. They used their discretion of who is a child. They constantly negotiate, even with the children, about whether they are whether one is a child or not. Of note, they sometimes withdrew status of childhood from children they perceived to behave appropriate adult-like behaviors, like having sex. Of note, service providers also used local definition of a child, which often include people around 19 and 20, as they were still dependent on adults. The working definition was situational. This sometimes led to the marginalization and exclusion of some young people from accessing services. For example, a humanitarian worker tended to allow young people between 18 and 21 to live in places of safety for children, arguing that these people are minors and need protection. I am of the view that consider the marked differences in understandings of childhood. and the shifting nature of the definitions, age assessments in South Africa should be conducted by a multicultural team which is independent. My research also begs a learning argument that the idea of returning children to their countries of origin is not viable. The South Africans' effort to retain independent migrant children have proved fruitless and a waste of scarce resources as they evade these programs or return back as conditions of living remain bad in their countries of origin. Sometimes children even return back to South Africa with the support of their families. On their way back, they are also exposed to a lot of risks like sexual abuse and violence. Government have to find ways to legalize their stay. Failure to introduce and implement policies which legalize their stay works against children's best interests, makes them to remain vulnerable to abuse and exploitation even in their adulthood. I thank you.
You've been listening to Stanford Mahati deliver a rejoinder to Elaine Chase on Monday Morning Meetings on Migration. Now you can find our podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher and subscribe for updates on Twitter and Facebook. As always, if you have suggestions about a story you'd like us to feature, or would like to post an audio rejoinder to something that has been said on a previous podcast, please send us an email at imes@uva.nf.